Well, Fridays aren't different here on Robinhood Radio, and Friday is the day we bring in David Tarachuk, the Media Beat. David has his own website, themediabeat.us. He's also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. It's good to be with you again.
Well, it's once again the main story, which has basically taken so many other things off the page, is the coronavirus. And it goes everywhere from local, like here in Connecticut. We now have to wear, if you're going to be out and about where there's crowds, you have to wear a mask. In New York State, you have to wear a mask if you're out and about. And I think most people are going to have to get used to that locally. Also in Massachusetts, the same, for quite a while. I don't think that mask thing is going away. But then you go to the other end of the world, to the place where this originated, Wuhan, China. And there's still reports and news releases coming out about how this virus got out, and even the army, the Joint Chiefs, they have come out with a statement on it as well, David. It's I think it's something that's needed if they're going to trace the really find a way to stop this. They have to trace back to the original origin of how it got out.
Sure, the virus developed in according to most reliable theories, from wildlife. Originally, it was hosted by bats, and then it seems to have got into the kind of wildlife that gets sold at a certain kind of China market called a wet market. It's wildlife creatures, often quite rare creatures, because they're felt in by many people in China, millions of people in China, in fact, to have special qualities when eaten, and health qualities, sometimes aphrodisiacal qualities, seems to be the most likely culprit as the actual origin. Looking to the future, something needs to be done about that situation, and there's much work being done on exactly how to do that. Endangered species supporters are, of course, in the front of this effort to make sure there's change there. But Wuhan is in an interesting position now. It seems to be returning to a kind of normality, nothing like what life was like before. This is something we can expect, I suppose, as the crisis peaks and we start the process that the White House is so eager to talk about, and so many people, of course, are desirous of. Everybody wants things to get back to normal. The message from the White House briefing room yesterday was that we now even have a slogan, which is remarkably close to the Trump election slogan of 2016, "Make America Great Again." Now we're going to have open. The slogan is "Open America Again." That's our devout hope, of course, the devout hope of many people. But the 50-plus states who are involved here in this effort to open America again are in a difficult position. They're now told that it's their call about opening up again. And yet this is the same White House, the same president, indeed, who only a week ago or less was saying that he had absolute control over the states. Now he's backed away from that, and his press briefing made it very clear that opening up again was a decision entirely for the states themselves, although the White House has laid out these guidelines that there are three phases which a state can go through towards opening up more fully. Some of them sound quite sensible. The only sort of rush towards too much enthusiasm, and therefore it sounds dangerous in the view of many public health experts, is that the conditions in which states, the conditions that limit a state's ability to open up a bit more are too vague and dangerously loose in some ways. If you get figures for deaths and figures for infection rates going down for a steady or a consecutive, rather, 14 days, then you can qualify your state for moving on to another phase of openness. That seems particularly unwise in view of what appears to be the incubation rate for this viral disease. 14 days doesn't seem a good enough length of time to make a judgment about how you're doing with controlling the disease or containing it.
You know, I look at, and we're going to talk, first of all, here, what's going on in this country. When I look at the protests that are now erupting over the response that individual states are having, and the terrible thing about this is that this now in the United States has become like everything else. It's become politicized.
The case of Michigan is a great example of that. There are very, very active protests in Michigan state capital. Clearly a very, very political exercise. And Trump himself has sort of helped to initiate that by talking about the governor as that woman from Michigan, who has, of course, been critical of the lack of federal support that she and her state have been getting. As so many of the state's governors have been, it's politicized without a doubt.
The thing that upsets me about it being politicized is that these people who honestly believe what they're doing is right. And protest in America is right, the form of protest. But to flagrantly gather without masks and to be so close, all you can do is go back to some of these churches that were allowed to remain open in down south, where pastors have died, where people who were at the services have gotten very sick. I mean, this is a disease that you don't know when it's around you right now. You have no idea. That person standing next to you can be perfectly healthy, and you're next to them, but they're carrying the virus, and you get it, and all of a sudden, maybe you get it worse than they get it because their bodies and their immune systems are stronger. I mean, that's the thing. I look at this, and even the most viral supporter of President Trump has to understand that it is basically a crapshoot if you're gonna do this out in public.
Yeah, as so often, it's all about the nature of information. You can, as you say, quoting those examples of churches and other gatherings which took place expressing complete contempt of the suggested precautions we should be taking, is whether it's a matter of fact that people catch this disease and die, and if they fit a certain profile and have underlying conditions are old or some previous ill health characteristics that predispose them to not recover well from COVID-19, that's a fact. Now, the people who are demonstrating believe that it's not a fact, and that it's all open to debate and to organized protest, indeed. Well, it can be, but in the words of many a sensible politician for whom this is now a guideline, originating from a United States senator, in fact, in the first formulation of the really rather valuable words, it said, "You're entitled in this country. You're entitled to your own opinion. Absolutely entitled to your own opinion. You're just not entitled to your own facts. And when these facts are a matter of life and death, as they clearly are, it becomes all the more important to maintain that distinction. And yes, there is a politicized lobby at work here, not only to open up America for business again. You can understand that completely, but also on a global basis, you can see the impact of political organizing and lobbying from people who supported Trump and helped to put him where he is, who have been impressing on him the possibility that he could now divert attention by attacking the World Health Organization and blaming that organization, that international organization, the only international organization that has the capacity to take anything like a leadership role in combating this world, this global, totally global disease. And you have that quite clearly politicized effect, so much so now that you get the serried ranks marshalling on both sides. Mm-hmm. Fox News has been called into action to denigrate the work of the New York Times, which has spent a lot of reportorial effort, and good, long-experienced reporters have been put onto this story of the World Health Organization's responsibility in this case, its important role, and indeed its failings, and assess really what is the actual basis for the United States current administration dropping its financial support for that organization, and indeed our chief executive blaming the WHO itself for having brought this disease to us. The kind of small-minded, nationalistic protest against an international organization that in other times, would be an expression of political opinion, and that's fine. But in confronted with the facts of the situation that are proving so irrefutable and so crucial, a matter of life and death, as I say, that it's a sad day for truth, it's a sad day for politics, and it's a sad day for the administration's capacity to do its job of taking a leadership role for the sake of the nation's health, putting the nation's health at risk for the sake of finding someone else to blame.
It's interesting because the juxtaposition that I find in Wisconsin when they went to court to hold the elections, which they did, the judges decided unanimously that the election should go on. Yet you look at the Supreme Court of the United States, the highest court of the land, they're not hearing cases right now. They're not hearing cases right now.
bowing to the facts of the situation in a way that Wisconsin judges felt wasn't so necessary. There is perhaps an argumentative case there that democracy is so important that you can risk people's lives to make them congregate at polling stations, or not make them, of course, it's everybody's choice whether they go out or not, but to drop the public safety regulations that prevent that gathering from happening. Yeah, it was an extraordinary judgment in Wisconsin.
And with most Americans asked to change their lives, and I would be willing to say that most Americans have changed their lives and are adapting to it. And this is the type of story, and this is where when you're president of the United States, Jimmy Carter learned this lesson early on in his career. When Jimmy Carter was president, what his brother Billy did affected him. And it affected the world view of the United States, because when you're president, all eyes are not only upon you, but they're on your family. And I bring this up because Donald Trump's daughter traveled and broke just about everything that you were not meant to do during Passover, and she was very flippant about it. And you know, when you're
why does that not surprise me?
Yeah, I mean, it's just
yeah. they seriousness is not a quality we associate with the Trumps.
That's the whole thing. They don't seem to realize that what they say and do, what I say and do, or you say and do, has consequences to us, but it doesn't have consequences on a worldwide basis. And when you're president and when you're a member of the family of the president, whether you're Ivanka Trump or whether you're Billy Carter, what you do is seen around the world and then reflects upon your brother or your father. It's just I just shake my head that the realization isn't there yet within the Trump administration.
Well, again, it boils down to whether you value and you respond to facts as they are on the ground, or whether you go around in a cloud of your own self-importance, perhaps, or a cloud of wishful thinking. Facts are really the basis of what we have to use as our guide in making all decisions, whether it's about the information we put out, the information that we circulate, or what actions we take when we leave or don't leave our houses. And some of us, of course, we have to remember, do have to. We are in, some of us are in essential services, and they must go on, and we must have some degree of contact with our fellow human beings. The important thing being now to absolutely control that and be very extremely careful as we go about our lives. As you say, everyone's life has been changed, and it's a change that we have to recognize and for the moment accept. And there will come a time when that can change back again to something toward, it won't be exactly like, but toward the way of living that we had before. But it's going to be inevitably a gradual and well regulated, as it says in the Second Amendment, a well regulated movement to get back to how we would like to be.
You know, and I look at the president's announcement of the committee to reopen the U.S. economy, and once again, I'm sorry, I have to shake my head. I think forming a committee is a great idea, but when you see certain names on it, you just shake your head. I mean, you see Robert Kraft from the National Football League. You see people from Fox News. You also see, I want to go through this, a casino owner, Sheldon Adelson.
Essential services we're talking about, of course.
Is on that committee. Who else is on there? I mean, there's some heavyweights from major corporations are on there, and they do have to be on there. But where they're light on here is Mitt Romney, who's probably one of the most successful businessmen, unlike Donald Trump, to run for president, even though he didn't win president. He's nowhere on it. Why? Because he's taboo. Nancy Pelosi, she's nowhere on it. Not that she belongs on it, but she's politically taboo. But also people.
Well, everyone serves at the pleasure of the president, and we know that this president is not exactly open-minded about the people he brings onto his teams. He's not exactly like Abraham Lincoln with his cabinet of rivals, people of very different political persuasions from him, or indeed President Obama, who had a Republican as the Secretary of Defense. That kind of open-mindedness is no characteristic of this current chief executive.
And I'll mention one more name that's really stands out, and that is the CEO of Liberty Media. And if people aren't aware of Liberty Media, even was rebuked by Donald Trump's own FCC for the way they were trying to force and to purchase radio stations. Now, don't get me wrong; there are some very qualified and great names on that list. Don't get me wrong; some forward thinkers. But is Bill Gates on that list? No. But there are some good people on that list. But let's get away from.
Well, again, Bill Gates is kind of taboo for saying things like dropping our support for the World Health Organization during a world health crisis is as bad as it sounds. And he's quite right, of course. What we do get with this administration setting up of committees, rather like the president himself thinking aloud and then saying that afterwards that he didn't say what he said, is that you get a reflection of signals being sent by the administration that of course indicate where they're coming from, because it's a way to get where they want to go. It's no surprise that this committee should be dominated entirely by business interests. I mean, after all, the push to reopen America for business as soon as possible is what the campaign is clearly about. For that to be the case, it's almost a given that it will be business people of one kind or another, and we know the kind, will be on that committee, and it's entirely understandable. I can't stress this enough. People will want to do this. People will want to open up again, especially people with a vested interest in that, and that means business. So this is a time when it's hard to really do justice to this on radio, but it's where facts and presentation in graphic form really come into their own. The New York Times, as you know, is a broad six-column newspaper, and the graph that they use as an illustration of their main story yesterday was so critical and so clear. And this is one of the times when graphic media really come into strength. But it demonstrates over a period of 240 months ago, I guess, ever since 2020 until now. The headline on the story is "Sales at U.S. Stores Hit Catastrophic Depths," and the graph goes from column one, right across the entire width of the newspaper, all the six columns, and while there are variations up and down of 2% upwards maybe, and 1% or 2% downwards too, from the mean of the average amount of sales in the retail and food service sector, it goes along that way from left to right until suddenly we're in the sixth column, right on the far right-hand side of the page, and it's dropped by 9%. So, of course, the business community is going to be activated and will want to do their best to get the country opening up as soon as it possibly can, and therefore the committee is bound to be tilted that way. But we have to, consumers of this information from the government, need to be well aware of what the forces are at play here. And of course, the forces are heavily tilted in the direction that you talk about. People that in another much more open kind of time would be thought to be too partisan to have in a decision-making body like that.
You know, Angel, by text messages, pointed out to me, just think of what had an effect on Donald Trump this week would be that former President Barack Obama heavily came out and talked about endorsing Joe Biden, which everybody knew he would sooner or later, but has shown that he will be a major force on the campaign trail, and that probably has kicked the president in the rear end a little bit into a little bit higher gear.
Well, yeah, I mean, nothing activates Trump more than saying he's not Obama. People making the comparison, and he almost psychotically wants to make that comparison all the time, and the best form of insult he can come up with a lot of the time is to say that it's the Obama era. And a judge is an Obama judge, and the like. But again, you know, we're talking about who wants to deal in facts and who wants to deal in wish fulfillment.
And when you look at the, here's where I get a little. Johns Hopkins every day posts the most accurate count of cases and deaths from cases. And when people used to, in the beginning, with the Obama administration, Trump administration, compared this to the flu, where, yes, 66,000 people get the flu during the flu season, which is about five and a half months long, but the death rate from the flu, although every death is too many, was about 1.8%. Well, in the United States, the death rate from the coronavirus is in between right now 4% and 5%. Now that sounds minuscule, But take 4 or 5% out of 600,000 people, and all of a sudden, it's not so minuscule. And, you know, a month into this, we have over 30. I think it's close to 35,000 deaths. I mean, that's what I want. Our government, and this includes the Senate and the House, and people to point out that this is not the flu. It is a different type of pandemic, and it is. Does have a higher death. I mean, I look at some of these stories now from across the world, David. Ecuador is having massive surges in their cities. Africa probably is going to be the next to be hit hard by this. I mean,
slow to take effect, but yeah. Then the numbers are still very low. But yes, it is very clear that Africa will be next on the list. Absolutely.
And you know, we everybody wishes for the protection like a flu shot. That'll come eventually. We can finally get back to be normal. But there's also been different drugs out there that have been mentioned, and most are just not very, very well at all. But there is a drug that was just reported that did have, in very, very limited use, effectiveness, and that was remdesivir. I don't know if you followed that at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, like every drug, it needs to be tested, and there are ways of fast tracking testing if it can be done. But with all of these possibilities I'm tempted to use the word silver bullet because I think people are desperate for something like that. It's most unlikely to happen. Silver bullets just don't appear suddenly. The research involved and the testing, of course, and the validation, especially on the level of the safety of whatever the compound is, always has to take precedence. Now, in cases of dire emergency, I mean, as indeed happened with the development of antiretroviral. With HIV/AIDS crisis of the 80s and early 90s, it's possible to do the fast tracking of the testing because people were dying at such a rate that it was regarded as over bureaucratic to spend too much time delaying the process by testing and retesting. But most of the time. Testing and retesting is really crucial, and in this case, we can look forward perhaps to a vaccine and a cure even, but it won't be coming soon. That's definite.
But a good old stock market on those notes and on the effectiveness of the trials that are going on and how it's being used in Chicago, the futures in the stock market are up about almost 800 points right now.
Right.
That's the way this country works.
Well, yeah, facts found on the one hand and wish fulfillment on the other. I'd rest my case.
Well, David, stay healthy and stay safe over the course of the next week, and we'll speak to you next week and see where we stand in this pandemic.
Hope we're both around for that.
Yes,
bye-bye
sure.
Now.
Take care. David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. You'll find it up on our on-demand page, the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. Just go to ondemand@robinhoodradio.com and click on the link that'll hook you to that site, okay?